Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Elogi. Say hi to the people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, small crowd today, but holy shit, we are not starving for news because some pretty big shit went down this week. Some of it involving, of course, a very somber anniversary that we're having as we're, you know, recording this show. Some of it involving the pandemic, including some more. Finally, we're actually getting some actual honest to God vaccine mandates. We'll be talking about that. There's also a surprising ruling from the Supreme Court of our friends down south in Mexico that is really making Texas look silly right now. There's a hurricane that's fixing to cover Newfoundland and Greenland with feet of snow. Yeah, that's because, you know, that's a normal thing to happen. And, oh yeah, scientists went down and they found a bunch of living footballs under the sea. Yep. That totally happened. But, yeah, that's obviously not everything we got. We got a bunch of other shit we're going to be talking about, and we'll be getting to all that and more on this week's edition of Let's Weekend. So this episode is for September 11th, 2021. And as always, we need to start off by talking about what we have been up to this week. And Chris, you get us started. What have you been doing this week?
It's not been too bad this week. The weather was pretty nice for the most part. Thursday got to a high of 72, I think, which was nice to be out when it was in the 60s. I had people like, oh, aren't you cold? I was like, no, this is perfect weather. It's not supposed to be in the 80s all the time. So this was nice in comparison to that. But yeah, for other stuff I've been doing, with the certain trailer that came out this week, I decided to rewatch the Matrix trilogy. Had not seen any of them in probably at least 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
So I had forgotten a lot of details, especially how the whole thing ends that could set up a new movie. So, yeah, I watched the first Matrix, which still is really good.
Probably the best movie of the whole trilogy is that first one.
Yeah, yeah, it holds up pretty well. There's a few weird things, but for the most part, it's a really fun movie that has a nice little ending there.
Yeah.
Then they did Reloaded, I think it is. That is the second one, which is also pretty good. Has some really nice set piece moments. And you can tell that they had some time to improve on the CG.
Yeah.
That's because they definitely show it off a lot there, especially that highway fight scene.
Yeah. Not saying that the CG from the first movie was necessarily bad. Some of it still holds up, but others of it has obviously not aged as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. That is pretty cool to see. Then the third one, Revolutions, I believe, is an interesting way to go because there's most of the movie is outside of the Matrix, dealing with the everything going on in Zion as the machines are sort of threatening to destroy it. A lot of stuff with that that I had just forgotten out almost completely through large portions of it, especially when they have mechs that look a lot like what Titanfall took a huge amount of influence from. They're very much sort of that kind of mech sort of suit that you can get in. They're a little bit bigger, I think. But yeah, it's a pretty cool little scene there. The ending is pretty interesting in the way that it sets up. We'll talk a bit more about that when we get to that portion of the show, but it was a pretty good watch all through. The third one's probably the worst of them, and it's maybe the worst in terms of just watching it one time, just one movie. But when you're watching it with all three, it makes makes it a better experience, I think. And that one's also one where they're showing off with their CG, especially with the final fight between Neo and the Smith, the final Mr. Smith agent. That is very DBZ like, anime like.
You
can tell that the Wachowskis were big fans of anime
because
they love to have those two kind of going at each other with such force that it causes the intense downpour of rain to bubble out and then crash back onto them in a way that they're like, that must not have been a very fun fight to film, just being constantly soaked with water when they're doing the actual fight sequences versus the CG stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty fun little movie to watch, especially when you get outside of the bits where it's like a rave and all that. It's also probably in some of the second movie as well, with some of the Zion stuff there. But yeah, it's a fun little trilogy to watch.
Oh yeah.
So there's that. Also watched a good bit of Harvey Birdman, just for the hell of it. That it's a really good show. Probably one of the best that Adult Swim made.
Yeah.
It's really tightly written. You know, it's like 12 minute episodes, so they could have two in one 30 minute block. And then there's a lot of elements that I did not catch the earlier times I've watched it. Things like there's the second season starts with an episode that is all about the sort of terror watch stuff, the color stuff. That was a big part of post 9/11 America.
Yeah, you don't hear about it very much anymore because they eventually just let it fall by the wayside. But yeah, for some of you who are listening who may be too young to remember this, but in the months and I wouldn't necessarily say years because it wasn't really that long that they kept doing it. But for the months after 9/11, the government created created like a whole sort of series of new departments and programs in place in their new sort of war on terror. And one of them was this color guide of, you know, how in danger we were of a terrorist attack at any time. And it was like a rainbow. It went from like blue to red, I think. And it was really fucking stupid. Because it was obvious it was never going to go down any further than anywhere close to green or blue as long as they were going to use it. Because, you know, the whole point of that thing was to keep people in a perpetual state of fear. Which is why they eventually got rid of it, because it didn't fucking work. It was useless.
Yeah, because nothing major happened to make it a thing that needed to exist.
At least not in the U.S.
Yeah. So yeah, they Phil claims that stuff has been stolen from his office.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show you a flashback of what it looked like the night before, and it looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
So he installs cameras everywhere that he can, bugs stuff so he can listen to people talking, all the sort of stuff that people wanted to do to ensure that a 9/11 would not happen again. Even so much calling the top level Blackwatch plaid. Then something even worse happens. So he says the top one is the seminal cover, the cover of Rush's seminal album, Moving Pictures. Making a very Canadian reference there.
Oh, yeah.
With that. So, yeah. What's the other side of that is this lawsuit involving Secret Squirrel, who, you know, when he is pulling out an item, he opens his
trench coat,
and being an animal, does not have anything underneath.
Yeah, so he's basically flashing his twigs and berries, even though you can't see it.
Yeah, is getting sued for indecent exposure, I guess.
Yeah.
Loses that because obviously they show a video of him just doing it without pulling out anything. So that kind of thing. But yeah, it's fun. fun episode there. There was another one that was also about our Peanut gets his puberty, his powers, and his they're trying to set him up with X the Eliminator to be his first villain, but ends up finding another villain to deal with before that. There's a lot of fun stuff there. There's one that's the whole efficiency thing. That Phil hires an efficiency expert that is named David, but takes out the vowels because it's too inefficient. So it's spelled DVD. That whole thing is pretty fun. Yeah, there's a lot of this stuff. It's like elements of things that were going on in the culture of the time. The Botox thing with Droopy, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's pretty neat to kind of watch that with a bigger eye on things like that. Especially like, there's like the climate change episode with the Jetsons coming back to sue them for ruining the future.
Yep,
that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's pretty neat to kind of go back to that kind of stuff. Makes it a bit more prescient.
Oh yeah, like people often forget, like. Anybody who ever like watched the Jetsons as a kid often forget that, like a legit like canon reason why all of their houses are like all up, like far up in the sky on like these giant poles is because of climate change.
Yeah. So that's that. Been playing some of the new releases this week. There's WarioWare Get It Together. I did a stream for that yesterday. Liking it a lot so far. The campaign did not take too long. I beat it in the course of the stream.
Nice.
About an hour and a half or so, but that's just where it starts. As you unlock the various other modes and ways of, you know, playing that stuff, because if you've played any of the WarioWare games, their whole thing is, you know, going to each of the sections where you can play them again after, you know, beating them in the terms of the campaign and trying to get the high score and beating that the next time, that kind of thing. Or playing the individual games and doing that to get the high score for the individual game and seeing all the variants for how it changes things up as it gets harder and harder. And all the other unlockables and such. So there's kind of that going on. The main issue I had is that the 8-bit DO controller I was using, I did not think about pulling it out until like 5 minutes before the stream. So inevitably when I tried to use it, the battery was not in great shape. So the bad thing is when trying to plug it in to charge it while I'm using it, it doesn't work as a Switch controller then. So it disconnects. So I'd have to sort of plug it in for a few minutes, let it charge up so I could use it for a while. That kind of thing, and kind of disrupt the stream that way, unfortunately. But the game itself is a good bit of fun. The big change for this game is that you are directly controlling characters instead of it just being, you know, doing specific actions or whatever, or controlling the character that is in the specific mini game. Here, you're kind of controlling characters, and you often get to pick a crew. In the campaign, you're forced to pick the person that the campaign is themed around, but you can fill out the rest with whoever you want. So that brings some interesting elements, as there are a number of characters that just have the ability to float around, some that have the ability to kind of shoot, others have special like gimmick ways that they move around. One kind of swims around a little bit, but doesn't move unless you are, you know, paddling, I guess, is the way to describe it. So there's one that is shooting like a jet of water, but can't move. So you have to, you know, if you want to move, you have to sort of aim the water jet at the ground, and that angles to move them around, that kind of thing. There's a lot of interesting mechanics, but a lot of games, you just want to get around easily, and find out that some characters are just better as all-around characters versus others. There are a couple of interesting ones that are set up for co-op. The dog and cat that run the taxi, they shoot left or right, but only one character shoots right, one character shoots left. So if you're just one player, you can only play as the one character that shoots right. You can't get the character that shoots left unless you have a second player with you.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. There's the same thing for the Anna and I forget the other girl's name is the ninjas that are kindergartners as well. They are a pair, so they automatically jump. They just keep jumping. And you can throw ninja stars to the right, the one that's set to the first player. Mm-hmm. The second player gets the one that shoots to the left. That kind of thing. So there's a couple of neat things there. The game is set up to allow you to play co-op
mm-hmm.
With up to 4 people total for some of the side modes. I think the campaign might be limited to just 2, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I don't have the means of doing any sort of co-op here, so I can't speak on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the game itself is a lot of fun. It has a lot of the extra content type of things going on that was in the Gold Edition on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Just without the gimmick of having 3 different types of control methods for games, and mm-hmm. I think was ultimately what limited that game from being as good as it could be.
Yeah.
Because depending on how or where you were playing it, you might not want to play, you know, games that tilt or ones that require touch or whatever.
Mm.
That kind of stuff. So liking a lot so far, going to put some more time into it, but enjoying it so far. The other game I've been playing is Fist.
Oh, yeah. Forged in Shadowforge. Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting that it doesn't really surface the subtitle
mm-hmm.
Many ways that it's listed.
Yeah.
Especially on the dashboard, it's just Fist.
Yep.
Which is a bit weird, especially when what you're controlling is called the Fist, but it's not listed as like an acronym.
Nope.
They just call it the Fist. Mm-hmm. But that is a Metroid-like. And the thing that I think is apt is when some people I've seen describe it as a melee-focused Shadow Complex.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense once you get further into the game.
Because
mm-hmm. You spend a lot of it in the early parts in this area called Old Town, which is kind of the first area kind of transition into this underground facility, and that's where it very much is like a Shadow Complex.
Mm-hmm.
Melee focus, so you have, you know, square for your basic attacks, triangle for your power attacks.
Mm-hmm.
You can also grab and throw with the circle button.
Mm.
There's a dash with R1, which is not an iframe dash. You don't get invincibility frames mm-hmm. with it, and you can't dash through enemies to get around them. So it's definitely got an interesting way that the combat works that isn't like a lot of games do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to control a bit differently, but right away they get you a wall jump, so you can sort of immediately start opening up more places you can go to. You'll get a double jump pretty quickly as well. I streamed this just before the stream started, so about 1 hour and 40 minutes or so into it. So I got those abilities, as well as you get a sort of soul style like Estus flask, but it's not limited like those where you get, you know, a limited amount of uses until you go back to a save point
mm-hmm.
type thing. It's the thing that, you know, they will, enemies can drop refills on that stuff. So it's not as limited as a souls thing, but it's very much like a, oh, I need some health real quick because I've been fucked up or whatever. But there's that. But yeah, it's a pretty fun game, especially once you get to your second weapon, which I just got before, shortly before ending the stream, which is so you have your fist, which is like a like harness you're wearing that has a big fist attached to the back that you use for melee attacks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The second one you get is a drill, which has some really fun combos. You're earning currency as you're going through the game, beating up enemies and finding little stashes
mm-hmm.
That you go into your little save point. You can upgrade with a nice little skill tree, and you can buy upgrades for that. So like early stuff you'll get is like an uppercut or specific combos. Once you get to the drill, you get out of the box, you get a glider out of it. That is pretty fun. You get a new way to open doors. That's called Tornado. Because you just drill in such a specific way that creates like a huge airflow that opens up these doors. They're somehow designed to open up through only this specific mechanic, this one item. That is weird, but then I got an upgrade for a combo. It just creates a big giant tornado that does a lot of damage to the enemies that are caught in it. That is pretty fun. I mainly was using that and just kind of giggling at how fun it was
to pull
this stuff off. So I knew that like I had hit a point where like, okay, this game is really found its point where you're just like, all right, let's fucking do this.
Yep.
Which is always special in a Metroid like game to do.
Yeah. This is actually one of the first, like, I think, major games since Genshin Impact that by a Chinese studio that's actually like of this quality.
Yeah, it's a good looking game. It's maybe not amazing looking. But it comes out of the China Hero Project program that Sony has been doing, where they're getting Chinese developers working on games for their platforms.
Yeah.
There's been a few other games. I don't think Genshin Impact comes out of that. But I think some other stuff has been. I'm trying to see if I can find a list of games. There's like Anno Mutationem, Boundary, Evo Tinction.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the thing. Yeah, there's a few other games too.
There's also Lost Solicide, I think, is one of them as well. There's Black Myth Wukong, I think, is another one. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. So there's some neat stuff, and this one is only $30.
Yeah,
looks pretty nice. There's some animation stuff that's a little bit weird, but, you know, in the way that Shadow Complex, like when you're doing, you can do finishers in the similar way that Shadow Complex does.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they just bug out in weird ways. Like if you initiate it when your character, the way your character would do the execution happens to also be in a wall, they'll just disappear into the wall and then pop out and do their thing. It's just a matter of the way that it sets up that stuff. Looks a little weird, but for what it is, it's been very fun so far. So definitely look forward to putting some more time into that. And the other thing I've been playing is Fortnite. The season is ending tomorrow, so I'm hoping to get some more time into that because I would like to unlock one or two more things. Just need to do some leveling. Just haven't had a chance to play today, but I think tomorrow I'll be streaming whatever the season ending event is for that. It's at like 4 o'clock our time, so that'll be about perfect for that. So that is kind of it. How about you, Brandon?
As for me, I am still playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition. I'm now midway through Mass Effect 3. That game is freaking amazing. That's about all I can say about that. Please, if you have not experienced the Mass Effect trilogy, or if you've had but you want to experience it again, please get Mass Effect Legendary Edition. You cannot do any better. I promise you. Because, you know, the sequel is now out, and it's been a long-ass time since I played the original. In fact, I never finished the original. I'm playing Psychonauts, the original, on my PC, which is easy because the game can basically run on a potato. And that game is very much, like, graphically, it's funny because, like, graphically, it looks kind of primitive compared to the modern, you know, games, but because it's so stylized, it's actually aged really well, surprisingly. So it's not that off-putting. It also helps that, you know, just the game's design in general was incredibly ingenious, frankly, in several different ways. It's also a really good example of how you can have a game that looks really, you know, weird and goofy and silly on the surface, and is really dark and fucking terrifying underneath it. Because the whole point of Psychonauts is that you're this kid named Raz who can go into people's inner consciousness and basically, you know, see their legit, like, you know, mental issues and hangups, and some of it is legitimately terrifying. Because, you know, these are, like, really deep-seated issues, like paranoia and, you know, childhood trauma, things like, you know, past tragedies and stuff like that. It's just, it's good, but man, it really, really surprises you just how dark it can get. And apparently Psychonauts 2 is even darker. So, wow. We'll see how that goes. But also on top of that, still watching The Expanse again. I'm still watching the first season, so nobody spoilers. And yeah, that show is freaking amazing. Yeah, really just as we're getting deeper into September, the weather is finally cooling off a little bit. Not by much, mind you. It's now going from like the low 90s to like the mid 80s, but considering when you've been going through weeks on end when it's been like 93, 94, you know, again and again for several days, 86 and 87 can definitely feel like a serious relief.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, you want to add anything before we move on?
Nope.
All right. Well, then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, as everybody probably knows, we are sort of commemorating the 20th anniversary, the actual 20th anniversary of September 11th, 2001, which was a very traumatic day for just about everybody involved. It irrevocably altered American history for better or worse going forward, and we're still living in its shadow today. Those of us who were alive during it have a lot of memories, and you know, tied up with it. We'll be getting to all of that later once we get to that particular part of the show. But for a lot of the world, September 11th was already a rather painful anniversary, but it wasn't a painful anniversary regarding 9/11 here in the U.S. There's another 9/11 that happened, and it happened all the way back in 1973 in a little country called Chile. And if you've been online for the past week, you may have seen people making references to this, because next to the September 11th terrorist attacks on New York, this is the other huge, enormous strategy associated with that particular date. And its effects on South America and Central America are still being felt all over the fucking world to this very day. The story essentially goes like this. In 1970, the country of Chile elected democratically a man by the name of Salvador Allende. Allende was a socialist. He was a Marxist. And he was the first democratically elected Marxist in the region. His election was somewhat tenuous, not because of any kind of voter fraud, but because of the nature of Chile's political system. It ran through the parliamentary system, meaning that everything happened through coalitions. Allende headed up a coalition government that was called Popular Unity, and it was made up of the various left-wing and socialist-aligned parties. It managed to eke out a majority in parliament through a bit of coalition building with the centrist Christian Democrats. Centrist, but worker-friendly. They had to make some concessions in order to do it, but they pulled it off. So Biende becomes the first socialist elected in the Western Hemisphere. And as you can imagine, the U.S. did not fucking like that at all. After he ascended to the presidency, he immediately began a reform of the nation's economy. He nationalized the copper industry as well as several banks. He began a redistribution of lands, congestion of enterprises, set up some aspects of self-management for some of the socialized industries, and he started a program of free milk for children. All of this resulted in that in 1 year from 1970 to 1971, the inflation in Chile decreased from 33% down to 19%. Now, as you could probably imagine, despite these gains, there was some serious opposition as well. And, well, a part of it had to do with, some of it was with Allende himself, some of it was with his followers, some of it was with the nature of the people that were opposed to him. He was, I'll get to that in just a second. But basically, because of the nature of his policies and because he was trying to sort of move it away from, like, doing it as wholly like a top-down government action, he was trying to get, like, popular and civilian control and interaction involved in these policies. Well, some people kind of took that the wrong way. There were some armed supporters that would start roaming the country, harassing and basically searching those they suspected of opposition. Because he was aligned with the socialist bloc, so that included, yes, the Soviet Union and neighboring Cuba, he helps a bunch of left-wing guerrillas, you know, take refuge in the country, using it as a base for activities. There were accusations that he was passing laws by decree, that he was removing cabinet members, harassing opposition media outlets, making illegal arrests, torturing detainees. Very little of this was ever actually proven to have happened, but this all then got to a point that, well, there's a thing you also have to understand about this that was happening behind the scenes, which was that as Allende was doing all this, they started, I mentioned that the U.S. really did not like this. Well, at the time, the U.S. was headed by President Richard Milhouse Nixon, and of course, everybody's favorite bloodthirsty advisor, Henry Kissinger. So Henry Kissinger decided to do what Nixon said he should do, make the economy of Chile scream. So they passed sanctions. They tried everything they did to try and isolate them from the international community. This, of course, directly affected and encouraged opposition within Chile. And, of course, the right wing within Chile started sort of coalescing around the military and a man that Allende had actually put into the head of Chile's military, specifically as a way of sort of calming opposition and trying to show that, no, I am willing to work with the opposition and do this democratically. That man was a man named Augusto Pinochet. So I guess you kind of know how this story's going to end, don't you? Yeah, so September 11th, 1973, the legislator implores the Chilean military to, quote-unquote, restore order. And by that, they meant removing Allende because they didn't have formal means of impeaching a president at the time. The military started firing on the presidential palace. Allende had to barricade himself with some followers inside of it. He got on the radio. He made one last speech to all the people of Chile where he encouraged them to withstand the dark night that was sure to follow, that freedom would reign once again. Viva the people, viva Chile. And then he put a AK-47 into his mouth and pulled the trigger. Pinochet would then take power, and then he would do everything that they accused Allende of having done and more. He dissolved the legislature. He appointed all his judges, authorizing trial by military courts, most of them with death sentence. He ended up murdering about 5,000 Chileans in the next 17 years. He disappeared thousands more into the prison system. Others fled the country. And then, of course, as for his fun little economic experiment, he decided to show the whole world that a country's government can be both very liberal economically and still be very fucking authoritarian in the social and political sense. Because the thing is, Pinochet was, for all of his generalissimo-ness, economically a liberal. And so he enlisted the help of a gentleman by the name of Milton Friedman, who decided to send a bunch of his trained economic advisors called the Chicago Boys, which then turned Chile into one of the freest markets in South America, while also making it one of the most oppressive and the most unequal economically. Pinochet would eventually die in the 90s. His regime would end up ceasing to exist in the 80s. But the scar that this action, which was aided by the CIA and the United States government, has basically shown that if the United States wants to, it will totally fucking destroy a democratically elected government if it does not align with their issues. And the thing was, in spite of all these accusations that Allende was an autocrat, the truth was he was doing basically everything he could to make sure that a Soviet Union-style dictatorship did not come into existence. Even though he was aligned with the Soviets, they kept demanding that he take more hardline measures, but he said, and I quote, they were going to do it the Chilean way to socialism or the peaceful way to socialism with pluralism. He actively kept far-left groups like MIR Chile out of the Popular Unity government because they supported armed struggle. He didn't want to do armed struggle. He had been democratically elected, and he wanted to show that a democratically elected government could implement socialism. But for the capitalist of the world, that is never good enough. And that was the other 9/11. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. So, with that happy bit of news, it's now time to move on. Start off with the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is Facebook. Because recently Facebook put out some AI software labels, and it was discovered that those software labels were labeling videos featuring black men as, quote, videos about primates.
Yeah.
Not cool. Yeah.
The weird way that this whole thing was working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course they'll say, like, oh, the software isn't racist or whatever, but it's not. It's not that, it's the people that work on it imprinting the way they think into it. It's a reflection of the people that created this AI system to manage these videos and the sort of descriptors it would use for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so they pulled at least the primate label out of the rotation.
So yeah, I guess. Was it just like it was just sense that their software was askew or something?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Still not a good look though, Facebook. But we are glad that they at least did something about it.
They should maybe review the whole thing and try to remove any chance that this kind of thing can happen again.
Yeah. Next up, we got another perennial asshole. This one, I'm pretty sure, was one of our assholes of the week last week. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who is still trying to defend his state's new abortion law by saying Texas would strive to, quote, eliminate all rapists from the streets. Yeah, talk about missing the point there, Padre.
Yeah, and somehow trying to suggest that they would have ways to deal with rapists that is very kind of Minority Report-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a question about, whether that it does not provide exceptions for cases of rape or incest.
Mm-hmm.
And he responded saying it does not force victims to give birth, even though it prohibits abortions before some women know they're pregnant. Added that Texas would strive to eliminate all rapists from the streets while taking questions during his first press conference since that law came into effect. And kind of the weird thing about the law that people may not realize is that it's not about when you first get pregnant. It's about when you first get your period prior to being pregnant. That's when the 6 weeks starts. So you could be left with a matter of even half that time to find out and do something about it. Let's see, his comments are confusing to me because they certainly do not seem to reflect the realities of this law.
Yeah.
Said Amy Jones, chief executive officer of the Dallas Area Rape Crisis Center. Recent surveys by the U.S. Department of Justice found that most rapes go unreported to police. About one in three victims reporting they were raped or sexually assaulted.
It's almost like he may not have actually read this law before he signed it.
Or he doesn't care.
Yeah. It's also just another sign that, you know, this is one of those things that they've been dreaming about having for so long. And now that they have it, they realize that maybe they really did not want it.
Yeah. And he says stupid things like, Texas will work tirelessly to make sure that we eliminate all rapists from the streets of Texas by aggressively going out and arresting them and prosecuting them.
Yeah, good luck with that, pal.
You were supposed to be doing that this entire time.
Yeah, like that was already kind of your job.
It's not like because of this law, oh, now we got to do this.
Yeah.
You're already supposed to be doing this, and there's a reason why people don't report it. Because it's hard to prove at times. And it doesn't help when the system makes it easier for men to get away with it.
Yeah. God, this it's like even like a week after this thing was passed, well, 2 weeks now, it's like every day it's showing like a new problem with it, not just in that it's morally and ethically wrong, but just how hack and slash and haberdash it was all put together. Like, there's so many possible ways that this can go bad.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But, and our last asshole of the week is the deputy mayor of Aramont, New York. He was arrested for amassing 16, not one, not two, not three, not even 10, but 16 assault weapons and several fake federal IDs.
Yeah, if you look in the article, you can see the collection.
That's a way
to display it that is very much like being super proud of it and wanting it to be easily accessible in a way that even if you only have one of these things, it should not be this accessible.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, did this dude have like a friend who owned like a gun shop? Because this is like the type of outfit you'd see if you went into a gun shop. You know, the way it's set up, the wall, you know, like that wall with the grid of drilled holes in them. It's like,
yeah, it's the one thing here is that there are, let's see, 16 assault weapons and 13 silencers.
Yeah, okay, that 13, that silencer part is already a no-no, because those are illegal for civilians to own.
Yeah, and at least some of these were not registered.
Yeah, that's the other big deal, because you got to register all the things. Also remember, this is the state of New York we're talking about, which has some of the strictest gun laws in the union.
Yeah, and it seems like they probably had an inkling he was doing something.
Yeah.
Or else they would not have, you know, come down on him. But yeah, let's see, he had two items that require special licenses to possess: a short barrel rifle and a sawed-off shotgun. Rifle is a version of the AR-15 with a barrel shorter than 16 inches, according to federal complaint signed by Homeland Security Investigations special agent. So Homeland Security was interested in him.
Yeah.
The shotgun has a barrel less than 18 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
It was sawed off. So, yeah. That's another no-no.
Yeah, he told investigators that he believed he was allowed to have a rifle with an illegal barrel because he was a peace officer.
No, you're not. If you're a peace officer, you still have regulations you have to go by.
Yeah, let's see. It added he was aware short-barreled rifles cannot be legally possessed. A special authorization from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
Yeah.
Let's see. Investigators also found a lockbox, which they opened after Downey said he did not have the combination. Said the lockbox, I located numerous federal badges and credentials. Let's see. These included a Drug Enforcement Administration badge. And badge holder, a U.S. Marshals badge and holder, 3 FBI badges and badge holders.
Actually, is it 3 or 4? Because I'm seeing 4 in this photograph.
There's 3. I think there are 2 different kinds of badges. Complete FBI credential sets, including 2-part identification cards. With Downey's name and photo, other credentials bore the imprints of the Federal Bureau of Prisons and the Department of Justice. All the badges and credentials are not authentic and unissued under the proper authority. In addition to those items, investigations also found Downey's name and image on several New York court officer badges and IDs, resulting in a state charge of possessing a forged instrument. And none of the court documents released so far by county or federal authorities suggest an explanation for why Downey allegedly amassed an illegal trove of guns and forged documents.
Seriously?
A local newspaper describes the deputy mayor as, quote, a Second Amendment advocate who has permitted handguns and was elected in March 2019.
Look, I'm sorry, but if you're amassing that many weapons, you're planning something.
Especially the fake badges and IDs.
Yeah.
That's very concerning.
Yeah, that seems to imply that he...
beyond, like, trying to just get, like, oh, here's a neat thing that I could just collect, but it has to be something else going on.
Like, that suggests that either he was involved in some kind of drug running, or he was, you know, illegally selling weapons, or he was about to take part in some kind of domestic terrorism. Like, that's...
some weird doomsday person. It's like, oh, the zombies are coming any day, but I don't know why you need the IDs, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would assume there's at least a good chance that some of these ideas came out of Fox News.
I would maybe. Because, see, the thing is, you talked about the silencers. That's, like, the biggest red flag for me right there. Yeah. Not even, like, you know, sawing off a shotgun. I mean, yeah, that's worrying, but, you know, I have an uncle who sawed off a shotgun. He just keeps it for home defense. But
isn't he bought it like that?
Yeah, it's possible he bought it that way, which means, you know, it was illegally modified before he purchased it, which is itself a crime.
And also, remember, it's not registered either.
Yeah, but it's the silencers that's the biggest red flag here.
Yeah.
There's only one reason to own a silencer. You know, the only other reason I can think of actually owning a silencer is, like, showing a person what the different sounds of a firearm when it's unsilenced and when it's silenced. And
yeah, I doubt having 13 instead of just, like, 1.
Yeah, you have 13, you're planning something.
1, you could see, like, oh, taking it to the gun range and trying it out and seeing how it sounds.
See, that I can at least understand. 13.
Having almost enough for 1 for each of these guns is too much.
Yeah. Well, anyway, moving on from there, we do have some heroes of the week, and our first hero of the week to talk about is the city of Richmond, Virginia, because this week they finally took down that giant, vulgar Robert E. Lee statue.
Yeah, a 12-ton statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee.
Yep.
More than 130 years after it was installed in Richmond.
Yep.
I think it's 61 feet tall, I've seen.
Yeah, it's big.
And as soon as they got it down, they started just tearing it apart, cutting it apart, at least. Because it's probably a heavy fucking thing that's too hard to get around without just cutting it up into smaller pieces so that it can be transported in a more logical way. But yeah, a big crowd standing around watching, cheering it on as they got it down and tore it apart. Yeah, the Governor Ralph Northam announced plans to remove the statue in June 2020, but ran into lawsuits trying to hold it up or stop it. But the Virginia Supreme Court last week, I think, decided to approve it. So they went ahead and did the thing that has been long needed. Mm. So, yeah, that's it's a good start. I think there are some plans. They talked about what to do with the pedestal, mm-hmm. as far as maybe put something else up or whatever. I didn't get a chance to read what that was. So mm-hmm. Definitely worth checking that out. So that's good.
All right. And oh yeah. We mentioned earlier, Texas's new abortion law. Well, the Justice Department will be suing the state of Texas because of it.
Yep. They are going to say that the state enacted the law, quote, in open defiance of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The act is clearly unconstitutional under longstanding Supreme Court precedent.
And in more ways than one, not just because of the abortion thing, but the way they're going about it.
Yeah, as Attorney General Merrick Garland said, those precedents hold, in the words of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that regardless of whether exceptions are made for particular circumstances, the state may not prohibit any woman from making the ultimate decision to terminate her pregnancy before viability.
Mm-hmm.
Garland noted the law deputizes private citizens to serve as bounty hunters authorized to recover at least $10,000 per claim from individuals who facilitate a woman's exercise of her constitutional rights. They're seeking permanent injunction from a federal court, the Western District of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's likely the Supreme Court itself will have the final word on the matter. Point out the law thus far had its intended effect, but the statute makes it too risky for an abortion mm-hmm. clinic to stay open. Abortion providers have ceased providing services. This leaves women in Texas unable to exercise their constitutional rights and unable to obtain judicial review at the very moment they need it. There's also a notion that, you know, there are federal employees involved in the state of Texas
mm-hmm.
that would be similarly not be allowed to exercise their rights. That's sort of where the mm-hmm. ability for the Justice Department to get involved in this.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So good on them, I guess. I honestly do not see this case surviving in the Supreme Court. It's just so, there are so many issues with how it's implemented that even the justices on the court who otherwise oppose abortion will find problems with it.
Yeah.
But yeah. So moving on from there, we're going on to the proper show proper. And first and foremost, as we do, we have to start with, unfortunately, a goodbye. One of the great actors of his generation, Mr. Michael K. Williams, passed away at his home this week. Nobody has announced exactly what he died of, but
yeah,
he was found dead in his home. He, of course, was a star of such great TV shows as Lovecraft Country and The Wire. Just a great actor all around, really.
Yeah. The sort of person that nobody has anything bad to say about him.
Mm-hmm.
Was only 54.
Yeah.
I think he could only start his acting career in his mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
So not even been doing it for all that long.
Yeah.
So he worked on, yeah, Boardwalk Empire, When They See Us, yeah, quite a few shows and movies, and seemed like he was, you know, getting to a place of doing bigger and bigger stuff. So it's a shame that he passed away in sort of what would be the prime of his career.
Yeah. It's sad, but he did leave a hell of a legacy behind him, so we have that. Well, moving on from there, we unfortunately do have to go back in the alleyway, pull up the garage door. Beep, beep, we're backing out the COVID dump truck. Here we go. And we'll probably continue to do, probably for the rest of the year. because I have a feeling that once fall and winter comes along, well, we're going to have issues. But anyway, first story from the COVID-19 dump truck. There's been a 245% jump in ivermectin calls to poison control centers. No kidding.
Yeah, according to the National Poison Data Systems, which collects information from the 55 poison control centers in the country, there's a 245% jump in reported exposure cases from July to August, from 133 to 459, mm-hmm. Which is a big jump, almost 2.5 times.
Yep.
Yeah, as emergency rooms across the country are, you know, filling up ICU beds and all that, as people that are unvaccinated or are taking weird stuff like ivermectin and all this that mm-hmm. do not do anything to really.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to. I want to make it clear there is, there are. For ivermectin, there is, you know, ones that a kind that's specifically made for livestock, horses specifically, and there is a human version as well. And they both basically have the same uses. They're antiparasitic medications. The human version is used for stuff like dealing with like river blindness or, you know, I guess like tapeworms, you know, parasites, you know, stuff, living stuff that starts feeding on the inside of you, you know. Yeah. And it basically does that by basically making you shit them out furiously. Which is kind of the problem why people keep taking the horse version, because the horse version is supposed to be strong enough to make a horse shit furiously. And horses are several pounds heavier than your average human. So when you take a medication that is powerful enough to make a 2 or 3 ton animal shit furiously, well, you do the math.
Yeah, don't buy your medicine from feed stores or farm supply stores,
yeah.
Especially ones that have pictures of livestock on them.
Yeah, that's usually like the manufacturer trying to tell you, yeah, this stuff you're buying, you better make sure it's going into the horse and not you.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if many of those sorts of stores have taken that stuff and put it behind the counter.
I know that some of them have put them behind the counter. I know they put them behind glass. I know some of them have put them inside like those anti-theft cases that, you know, they do for like electronics at Walmart or Target. But yeah.
And those are made for animals, so they are made for, you know, ones that have different chemicals and such in there.
And body mass. And all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're not made for humans. The ones that are requires prescriptions.
Yeah, and you have to specifically get it prescribed by a doctor.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then this week was also the announcement that Biden and his administration are now putting forth some actual vaccine mandates. The big one is he unveiled a new plan to force businesses to require vaccinations or weekly testing. I believe he's doing this, I think, originally, like, there's one he's doing for everyone who works for the federal government that does not have the out of weekly testing. You have to get vaccinated. Period. No.
This one's for all businesses with 100 or more employees total.
Yes, exactly. At
that location. So
yeah.
That is going to cover
a good 100 million people, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. As he says, we're in a tough stretch and it could last for a while. We can and we will turn the tide on COVID-19.
Mm.
Yeah, saying that this rule for private sector employees, which will be issued by the Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administrations, would apply to 80 million workers. So they, and of course, Republicans are getting super mad at the notion of this happening, as, you know, a number of governors are, they're just saying, like, we're not going to allow anybody to enforce this.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though. whining about it and making all this noise is pretty much the only thing they can do, because the vaccine mandate is 100% constitutional, and there's a good century of Supreme Court precedents backing it up.
Yeah.
So,
people have been, is this the thing that people have been like, oh, what about the 10th Amendment?
Well, I think they're talking about the 14th Amendment specifically, but thing is,
I've been seeing the 10th.
I've been seeing 14th, but there also might be 10th Amendment people. Here's the thing, though. As far back as 1905, the Supreme Court has ruled that vaccinations can absolutely be mandated by police power if they so choose, as long as it's not overly intrusive or does not force it upon people whose health or comorbidities would make the vaccinations lethal. So, you know, if you're allergic or one of those people who are immunocompromised who just otherwise cannot take the vaccine, you know, like my grandma, you're exempt. And this was not just a one and done thing either. They kept reaffirming it pretty much every 15 years after that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a thing that's, you know, in the time of pandemics, that type of thing, there's very much allowance for the federal government to make requirements and rules and such for this, for the greater good.
Yeah.
And we unfortunately have many people that are whiny babies.
Yeah, we also have a bunch of people who suddenly think that they're constitutional scholars.
Yeah, that always happens, though, when there's anything that shows up, like when they tried to make Obamacare be unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, that has yet to become the case.
Yeah. Funny enough, they had a lot of this similar shit back in the 70s when they legislated seatbelts.
Yeah. Which is the easy counterpoint to any of this stuff, is like, you wear your seatbelt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that means you think they're okay. They help you save you in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be extreme circumstances where they're not going to, but that's a much better odds than you would without it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, that's what vaccines and masks do.
Yeah. But
so yeah, that's kind of the thing here.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, masks, that's the other thing. Biden has also revealed a plan for getting schools to require masks or losing federal funding.
Yeah, so this is sort of new federal funds they're doing out of the funding they have for this stuff. So they are going to require coronavirus safety measures. Like, let's see, some districts are opposing their states to strengthen COVID-19 safety measures. Yeah, like some in Florida recently defied the governor to require masks in schools. President Biden promises to fill in any gaps in funding that result. Goes above beyond the $122 billion set aside for the school reopenings in the American Rescue Plan. Local school districts will be able to apply to the Department of Education in the coming weeks to restore funding withheld by state leaders.
Mm-hmm.
A school district implemented strategies to help prevent the spread of COVID-19 in schools.
Yep.
It's a new grant program that will be called Project SAFE, supporting America's families and educators. It'll be funded under Title IV of the Every Student Succeeds Act.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers and staff directly employed are funded by the federal government, including those at U.S. Department of Defense schools, Bureau of Indian Education operated schools, and Head Start and Early Head Start preschool programs for children in poverty, subject to a vaccine requirement. This vaccine covers nearly 300,000 school staff, serving more than 1 million children. Biden's plan also highlights his intention to use the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights, who after states that, in federal government's view, discriminate against students with disabilities by banning mask mandates. There are already investigations open in 5 states.
Yep.
Another thing is there are some parents of children with disabilities or whatever, saying that mask mandates are bad, which I could see in some cases, but
yeah, in some cases that makes sense, but
I'm not sure how much they apply to these specific cases.
Yeah. And some of it is also just, and some of it is also just sort of transferring their neuroses onto their children.
Yeah, because I don't know if you saw the video of the kids that were being blocked from coming in without masks.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are egging them on to, like, you know, let them in, let them in.
Yeah.
I think it's the principal's at the door saying, you know, trying to get some sort of reasonable reaction out of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually just relents and lets the kids in because that's better than, you know, trying to start any fight or anything like that going on. Mm-hmm. But it's like there's so much hostility going on with school boards and principals and all that from parents and mm-hmm. people that don't even have kids.
Yeah.
I think there was a note that was getting passed around between MAGA groups that were basically like, we're going to go in and, you know, threaten these people.
Yeah. Like they even had like a script prepared, basically.
They're like, if you don't know what to say, we have scripts for you.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing to go into those, you know, PTA meetings and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, Teresa told us herself she and Scott had to deal with just a group of those people over in Chicago. So
yeah, it's like people have even gone so far as to, you know, bring like zip ties as a mechanic for threatening
mm-hmm.
them. It's like this shit has gotten so fucking out of hand, and there's so little general respect for the people running these schools.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help that there's been like a long-standing campaign by right-wingers to take over school boards and such.
Yeah. The good thing is the schools in my district have a mask mandate in place. So,
yeah,
we're good. Not sure about the other parts of Georgia, but we at least have it on point. Yeah. So, yep, that's it for the dump truck this week. We're going to go ahead and put it back in the garage, pull the door down, because we will almost certainly have to get it out again next week. And now, following it up from there, it's time. This is the day 20 years ago that the United States and the world was irrevocably changed. Chris, how old were you when 9/11 happened?
15.
15? Yeah. I was 16. It was my freshman year of high school. And I still remember the whole thing vividly because my algebra...
Yeah,
I would
be 15.
No,
the
I
same
would,
age as I am. It's 2001.
Yeah, 15. It was 2001. Well, you also got to remember I was held back a grade.
Yeah.
So... I might have been older than you were.
No, we're the same age.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I was 15 as well. All right. Yeah.
Grade doesn't matter, but age does.
Yeah. It's freshman year of high school. I was in my algebra class, and I still remember that algebra class because my algebra teacher was a cunny, 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 cunt, 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 cunt. I do not remember that woman fondly at all. She had a really bad attitude. She just did not care to actually teach any of us. And she mostly relegated all of the teaching to the computer. So as you can imagine, that was fun for all of us.
Yeah.
And then, as we're midway through, the assistant teacher, who was also the teacher of another class, across the hallway comes running in, opens up the door. She comes running in and she says, you guys, you know, she said, you know, Miss, whatever her name was, I do not remember. You're going to want to turn on CNN because a plane just flew into one of the towers at the World Trade Center. Yeah. And I'm like, I was trying to like go through my head. It's like, wait, which one is the World Trade Center? And I remember
gonna say, like, how many kids would have known what those were?
Yeah. And then
you were a Simpsons fan.
Or, you know, you watched a lot of movies that took place in New York, which I did. So, you know, I recognized a lot of New York landmarks. And the very moment they turned the television onto CNN was the very moment that the second plane hit the North Tower. Yeah. Like, literally, just the moment. They were just, like, it was, what's his name? The guy who was a fairly... He hasn't been on CNN in like 20 years, but he was like the guy. He was like the big guy on there for a long time. I forget what his name was, but he was there and, you know, talking over it. And then all of a sudden you see it flying in from the left part of the screen. The plane comes in, boom, it hits the other tower. And that's at that moment that everybody realizes, holy shit, this isn't an accident. They're actually planning this. And, yeah, let's just say that schoolwork basically stopped for the rest of the day. Like, straight up. The rest of school we did that day was us just watching the news. And then I went to my economics class, which was a class I actually liked because we had an economics teacher that was goofy and actually fairly good at his job. And, while we were watching it there, and he was given a diagram of, like, what had just happened, you know, he drew what towers were, said what they were. Because, again, this was the World Trade Center. Kind of important for an economics class, right?
Yeah.
And then the we're watching on CNN, and the guy says, yeah, we just got a new report. We're taking you live over to the skies of Washington, D.C., and that's when you see the smoking crater that's right in the middle of the Pentagon. And that was the point when I had a freaking panic attack.
Yeah.
Because not many of the other kids knew it, but I knew what the Pentagon was. That was the epicenter of our nation's defense. And it had been attacked. A good chunk of it had been rendered a smoldering ruin. And so, as you can imagine, I did not take that very well. I had to leave the classroom. I had to go to the office. My mother was at work at the time. I had to call her. She had to tell me, it's like, you know, it's okay. You don't have to worry about it. It's going to be fine. I ended up, you know, calming down and going back to class, and we basically watched the news for the rest of the day. Yeah. What about you?
I went into study hall at the time, so there was kind of the, like, the first one had hit before then. So there was that, and, you know, the TV was on, which is a weird thing to have happen. So there's that. So yeah, that was kind of the weird thing of, why is the TV on?
Yeah.
Especially to something like CNN.
Yeah, which I'm going to be, I'll be frank with everybody. Like, television news is like a super huge thing now. Back then, the majority of television news was just background noise for most people.
It's airports.
Yeah, it's airport. Background. It's, you know, retirement.
It's what's on while you're waiting for your flight to,
yeah,
you'll be ready to board or whatever.
Or, you know, you're in a restaurant or something and, you know, they have a couple of televisions. One of them has ESPN. One of them has the news network of their choice.
Yeah. Especially when school have the TV on and it's not like a morning,
yeah,
you know, report thing or what was it? Channel 1?
Channel 1. Yep. I remember Channel 1.
Yeah. Where they have that on every once in a while.
They actually had not run an episode yet that year before 9/11. Their first episode was literally post 9/11.
Yeah. I think there was a show that was called, was it 3-2-1 Contact?
Yeah.
That was a wild-ass show.
Mm-hmm.
That we got to see on occasion, so.
Now, I think it's also important to tell people, because of the way our country reacted to it, we kind of make this out to be a attack that was solely with American victims, but that was not the case. The majority of victims were Americans, yeah, but a lot of them were people from other countries because, you know, flight 93, you know, it was an international flight. I mean, yeah, like all those planes were international flights. They had people from Saudi Arabia in them. China, from Japan, Korea, Thailand, various parts of South America, Mexico, And keep in mind,
to their advantage of these guys getting on, because none of them would have looked at, like, you know, regular Americans.
Yeah. And furthermore, you know, there were a lot of international business people in the towers when they fell as well. So,
yeah,
because remember, it's called the world. It was called the World Trade Center for a reason.
Yeah. I don't know if you had this weird sort of trauma of when this stuff happened. You were very worried that they were going to, you know, crash into your school.
Well, no, I didn't, because, you know, I was in the middle of Podunk, Georgia.
Yeah, so I guess that might have been unique to hear.
If you were, like, if you were living in a major city like Cleveland or Chicago or something, I can totally
Akron would be a major thing, we were told.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if there would be a place to nuke, Akron could be one of those, because that's, you know, the home of rubber in this country, one of the major
Now, if I was in Atlanta, you know, like Lee was, then, I would, because Atlanta is where, like, the CDC is located, and, you know.
Which is a weird thing to tell kids, like, oh, yeah, if they're going to nuke places, they might be actually nearby.
Yeah.
You tell them when they're kids, like, oh, we might get nuked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait, what? Jesus Christ, I have to worry about this shit?
Yeah.
And then that
basically, 9/11. Yeah, and 9/11 basically created an entire generation with post-traumatic stress disorder. Because the news networks could not stop fucking rerunning that same goddamn footage over and over and over for weeks on end.
And again, to reiterate, this was big enough that ESPN stopped.
Yeah, all of ESPN, 1, 2, and 3, all stopped.
There were no sports at that point.
The Food Network shut down completely. They did not... The Food Network,
At that point, we would not have had any channels that were dedicated to reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of cooking stuff, that's not really reality shows.
Yeah, even the Food Network basically shut down for the day.
Maybe the only ones that would have not done anything were, you know, your TV Guide kind of channel.
Well, Comedy Central kept running. And I know
they
that.
They don't have any way of doing news or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I will say they did ticker that started going at the bottom, but I think a lot of the producers there were like, look, it's a really awful shit that's happening. People are going to need an outlet. We just need to keep going as usual. So, and then all the shit that happened in the weeks afterwards. The run-up to the invasion of Afghanistan, the passing of the Patriot Act, the founding of the Department of Homeland Security, of the TSA, of, you know, that color code that we made fun of at the top of the show. All that shit, you know, it all happened so fast, and it built up so fast.
Yeah, there's also an unfortunate, ugly reaction to this of the people... They were very much racist, looking to find their personal way to get back at you know, the terrorists by attacking or yelling at anybody that looked vaguely like
in their minds what the stereotype of a Muslim. Which that half of the times they weren't even Muslim, Sikh or Hindu.
They're just Latino, or their skin was
vaguely dark and Arabic looking.
There was not that much in the way of mention of Muslims on TV at that point.
Yeah. Well, unless, you know, it was, you know, some sort of Middle Eastern terrorist.
Yeah. But at that point, that wasn't really a major focus for media or news, because, you know, this hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
At least in the U.S., no major thing happened.
Yeah. And it's also, there are a lot of things that you can get on George W. Bush's administration on for the reaction to 9/11. A lot. Like, a lot, lot. We could probably fill a whole show with them. But if there is one small feather that Bush had in his cap, it's that he immediately realized that after this happened, he was going to have to reach out to the Muslim community in America. And he made it a big point of trying to tell the American people that this is not, you know, a thing that most Muslims support or believe in. It actually goes against their religion fairly obviously. Muslims are not our enemy. You know, that he, which is basically the reason why during his tenure as president, you didn't really see any of the sort of Islamophobic slurs and behavior come out from the right, like they did after Obama became president.
Yeah, and that's another level of shit, but unfortunately, he didn't really convince too many, you know, citizens of that.
Well, he convinced just enough to keep their mouth shut until he was no longer in power.
But yeah, this wasn't particularly great. There was somebody that had a good Twitter thread where they found a Best Editorial Cartoons of the Year book from 2002.
Yep.
So it is very full of the things you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put a link to it in the chat if you want to look through the thread and see the things that are in there.
Yeah.
A lot of it's the stuff you would expect, and there's some particularly poignant ones.
Yeah.
Like one that says, America's Hour of Needing Each Other. It shows a black dude helping a cop out of the rubble, saying, each one thinking, see the black guys thinking, to think I always hated cops. The cop, bloodied, thinking, to think I always hassled blacks. It's like, oh, that aged very well.
It's like, wow, that actually ended up.
Yeah, there's another one that is, I think, pictures of. Let's see. Oh, yeah, here it is. A guy rolling out a trash can full of the word me, like getting rid of selfishness.
Yeah.
Neighbor saying, heard you were doing some major reprioritizing what's got into you.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy answers September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
With the American flag, it says patriotism on it. Picture of his family, it says family on it. And the Bible, it says spirituality on it. It's like, shit, this is, except for the selfish part, getting rid of selfishness. The rest of it explains the GOP's change. Perfectly.
Yeah. And some of it is also, you know, meant to, it's also just a fairly general reflection of just how Americans in general were feeling after it. It was just a huge trauma. We were all trying to make sense of it. And we had all, a lot of us had all this anger in us and we didn't know where we should point it.
Yeah. Our naivete.
Mm-hmm.
It really should have been broken with the Pearl Harbor attack.
Yeah.
But people found themselves back into a safety feeling. They got shattered again with that attack.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then the government went crazy and still hasn't recovered from it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mm. And just then, of course, as they show all of these political cartoons that you link to, and it's like you can slowly see the descent into insanity as you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obsession with Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of them are actually very reminiscent of cartoons that shortly after Pearl Harbor, actually, including the racial caricatures. Let's see, what else? Remember how we had, like, all these somber, like, all-star concerts as well for America?
I do not remember much of that.
I definitely remember them, because there was, like, three or four of them.
I know I remember, like, the first baseball game back with the Mets and Yankees that threw out the first pitch for.
Yeah. Yeah, and we recently just got out of the war that we started shortly after 9/11.
Yeah, and this whole thing gave way for the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a result of 9/11, but sure helped the Bush administration wedge that in there as a thing they could do.
Yeah.
As a result.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a whole generation of Americans that lived never knowing the America not being in war. For the first time.
Went to get on the plane without taking off shoes and shit.
Yeah. For the first time, America is now in a place where it is not now no longer officially involved in a foreign war. So,
At least not...
Like I said, not officially.
Yeah, not in full force.
Yeah.
Because they're still, like, working at the DMZ in Korea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right, moving from there. From the Supreme Court of the United States, Justice Stephen Breyer, who has, in the recent days, shown himself to be an incredibly fucking narcissistic asshole, recently warned against remaking the court.
Yeah, saying, you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, we know that. That's why we're trying to do it in the first place.
I mean, it's the results of what the Republicans have done over the past 5 years.
Yeah.
That has spawned this reaction from Democrats wanting to find a way to balance things out, if not push it in their favor, because things have been abused. Because there's not been any explicit rules about what you can and can't do with regards to who is allowed to appoint judges or justices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when one of them dies in the last year of a president, pulling out bullshit rule that, you know, the majority can do because they're the majority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, if they do this, they can come back and expand it more. It's like, yeah, they've already done that, essentially, the way they've turned it from, you know, a 5-4, 4-5, you know, sort of balance to 6-3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But just as a reminder, there is nothing in the Constitution that says Supreme Court has to be only 9 people. In fact, I'm pretty sure the original Supreme Court was actually a smaller number. But that's another story.
Yeah.
Next up, the Supreme Court of Mexico managed to make the state of Texas look really silly by ruling that abortion is a crime, officially decriminalizing practice, at least for the northern part of Mexico, in that heavily Catholic country.
Yeah, there's a caveat to this in that federally it may be decriminalized, but it's still up to the states within Mexico to make it legal. Mm-hmm. I think only like 4 of them have made it legal, at least some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So there are still a ways to go. It's not like their version of like when the Supreme Court in the U.S., you know, made gay marriage legal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on that sort of level of legalization, but it's a good step.
Yep.
Tear down parts of their toxic parts of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
As it relates to religion.
Yep.
Things and that we're trying to deal with at this point.
Yeah. Mexico as a country has a sort of odd and tenuous relationship with the Catholic Church, because obviously the country itself is heavily Catholic. Even like the religious parts of the country that aren't Catholic are like offshoots of the Catholic Church. But the thing is, for like the longest time, the Catholic Church was also like this agent of foreign imperialism. It's really, I guess, appropriate that the man who is considered to be sort of the father of the nation is Father Miguel Hidalgo y Costilla, a Catholic priest who also rebelled against the church and had children against his priestly vows. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, there was like a whole part in the early 20th century where the Mexican government was actively trying to suppress the church because it was ruled by socialists at the time, and they were acting to undermine the revolution. There was this whole thing called the Cristiano War based around it. But yeah, yeah, so, Mexico making Texas look really silly, and I'm starting to think that there's going to start being more desperate Texan women going across the border into northern Mexico to get an abortion. So, good job, Texas. Anyway. Next up, in other good birth control rulings, the country of France recently expanded its free contraceptive program to all women up to 25 years old.
Yeah, it was previously up to 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So they're expanding it a good bit more.
Mm-hmm.
As you may or may not know, abortions in France are free for all women and girls.
Mm-hmm.
This also include free medical visits about contraception. It starts on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
The health minister didn't spell out whether the measure would apply to trans and non-binary people. The health ministry did not respond to queries seeking clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, saying that young women are using contraception less than they used to, and that is because of financial reasons.
Mm.
So yeah, it'll cost the government about 21 million euros, or about $25 million per year.
Mm.
Then address contraception methods for men.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not really surprised in that case.
Mm-hmm.
That's also Europe, where a lot of healthcare is
public. Socialized. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, moving on from there. Hurricane Larry. It is currently, I think it's meant to hit at like a category 1. Is going to hit Newfoundland now, and it's set to also cover Greenland with a feet of snow.
Yep, it's going to do some damage. I don't think it's going to be, you know, as bad as like Ida was.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that kind of stayed out off the coast, east coast,
mm-hmm.
kind of just swooped in right up there in the northeast up to hit Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, going to drop a good bit of rain up there.
Yep.
But yeah, the snow is the interesting part, where it's kind of going to turn into like a, what's the term they're using here? Like extra tropical cyclone.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, and forecasted to be absorbed by a larger extratropical low near Greenland by the end of the weekend, which could drop up to... let's see. They just say feet of snow. Could be a few feet of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not an uncommon thing, but sort of hurricanes jumping in to create that effect or pump up a storm is a bit unusual, especially doing it here in early September.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're expecting 12 to 18 inches of snow in the eastern half of the island nation. Higher elevations along the east coast could get 2 to 4 feet or higher.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some people talking about this, how they have buildings that have doors on the second floor, because it is not uncommon for them to get enough snow that maybe the first floor is, you know, covered in snow, blocked off. Mm-hmm. So they're having alternate ways of getting out safely.
Mm-hmm.
Through those kinds of means. But yeah, that's an interesting little weather thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm. All right. And related, I guess, to climate change, 200 plus medical journals warned that climate change is the single greatest threat to public health. And along with that, Pope and other Christian leaders are calling for bold climate action.
Yep. Saying that... Yeah, rapidly warming climate is the greatest threat to global public health. More than 200 medical journals are warning in an unprecedented joint statement that urges world leaders to cut heat-trapping mm-hmm. emissions to avoid catastrophic harm to health that will be impossible to reverse.
Mm-hmm.
No temperature rise is safe. In the past 20 years, heat-related mortality among people over 65 years of age has increased by more than 50%. Yeah, obviously a lot of public health systems have been put under strain with weather-related storms and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people died just in New York and Philly and all that,
mm-hmm.
living in, you know, sort of basement apartments, that kind of thing, that
mm-hmm.
are technically not supposed to be rented out, but landlords try to get as many people as they can for all that mm-hmm. money. So people just drowned because they could not get out of their apartments
mm-hmm.
Early enough. that kind of stuff. And as people say, the cost of that Green New Deal is a lot less than what would happen if we do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And as for the religion part, Francis, along with Justin Portal Welby, who's the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Anglican Church over in K, and the Archbishop of Constantinople and Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew from the Eastern Orthodox Church. All of them, that was a picture taken in 2016. They're basically doing all the same stuff again, because now, you know, we can't really ignore it anymore. Yeah.
Which is a big thing to do, because religion's been used as a shield against climate change.
Well, yeah, but you also got to remember this. The only quote-unquote Protestant group in that trio is the Anglicans. And the Anglicans tend to be mainstream, fairly sane Protestants in the U.S. The biggest opposition in the Christian world is coming from the evangelical wing.
Yeah, we have a lot of in the U.S. And
mm-hmm.
See plenty of dumb statements, being like, oh, it is the height of hubris to think that man can affect the climate of our world and that God won't protect us from that.
Yeah, he's already kind of saying, you know, that you might do this a little more, you know.
It's like, oh, what happened to Noah?
Mm-hmm. Like, if that's the case, what happened to Noah? What happened to Jonah? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, September is celebrated by many Christians as a season of creation, an opportunity to pray and care for God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
As world leaders prepare to meet in November at Glasgow to deliberate on the future of our planet, we pray for them and consider what choices we must all make.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be drastic measures that are going to be needed.
Mm-hmm.
Means of getting people off of gas-guzzling vehicles onto
electric
vehicles or public transportation.
Yeah.
Dealing with, you know, infrastructure here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Would be a big thing that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Because the problem is, like, so much of our infrastructure is based around private transportation.
Yeah.
So much
in the way of, like, high-speed trains or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, we have bus lines, you know, we have subways, but those are pretty much exclusively to the big cities.
Yeah, and people don't often live in the city in which they work or in close proximity.
Mm-hmm.
That walking is a viable thing.
Yeah. And as for like electric cars, the infrastructure just really isn't there yet to, you know, make it so that you can charge those things as frequently as you need to.
Yeah. I hope with the infrastructure bill that would be a big
part. That is one of the things they will be expanding upon, yes.
Yeah.
They are like making it a point of. They are making the point of trying to say, yeah, look, the age of the petrol engine is coming to a close very fast. And the age of wind and electric and solar is here to stay.
Yep. I think we only just in the past couple of weeks had the last country and their use of leaded gasoline,
mm-hmm.
which is a wild thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they probably didn't have any other recourse economically.
I mean, they used up the last of it because it's not really being produced anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, all right. So that's basically it for all the serious stories. Now we get to the lighter stuff. Starting with some science news. Scientists recently discovered fossils of a new sea animal that was football shaped. It was from roughly... it was from roughly
500 million years,
which means it was right smack in the middle of the Cambrian age, which makes sense when you look at this thing.
Yeah. Paleontologists in Canada discovered a new species of sea animal that was about 1.5 feet long and kind of football shaped, with a large protective shell over its head, a tooth mouth, and a pair of spiny claws.
Mm-hmm.
They have dubbed this the Titanochorus guineensis.
Mm-hmm.
I believe part of a long gone animal group from the Cambrian period some 500 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see kind of the look of it, at least as far as they can imagine. This would have been a giant during a time when most sea creatures grew to the size of a pinky finger or smaller.
Mm-hmm.
The sheer size of this animal is absolutely mind-boggling. It's one of the biggest animals from the Cambrian period ever found.
Yeah. Basically, what's neat about the Cambrian Age is it's basically a time when, like, because, you know, pretty much all life that existed at that point in time was purely underwater. And so, sort of like the line between where, like, an animal begins and a plant begins was, like, really blurred. So, basically, you had just a whole sense of really odd-looking sea life.
Yeah.
A lot of it tended to look vaguely insectoid or vaguely plant-like. You know, like trilobites. Those are like probably the most famous thing from the Cambrian Age. Trilobites are basically, you know, sea bugs. And yeah, that's kind of what makes the Cambrian Age so fascinating, because it was just basically the closest thing to an honest-to-God alien world that you could experience. You know, except, you know, it was 50 million years ago. It was, you know, 50 million years around, yeah, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Next up, Taco Bell. Taco Bell is launching a pilot program for customers to recycle used sauce packets, which I'm glad, because that is a lot of wasted plastic, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's become a thing that's been more important to them,
mm-hmm,
as they not only look at, you know, foods that are popular on their menus, but also the waste and whatnot that goes into making them. I think they mentioned here that's why the Mexican pizza was ditched, because, mm-hmm, it just required too much cardboard.
Yeah,
to make it feasible to make.
Yeah.
But yeah, this would be a pilot program to potentially recycle some of the 8 billion pounds of used sauce packets.
Yeah,
that go into U.S. landfills each year.
Yeah. Now, my question, of course, is, you know, how are they going to effectively recycle this? Because plastic is actually very difficult to recycle.
Yeah, it's, let's see, you go through the mail. The program, which was initially announced as a trial in April, was created with recycling company TerraCycle to divert as many used sauce packets as possible away from landfills and reuse them. You sign up for a TerraCycle account, collect empty sauce packets in a recyclable container, print a free shipping label from TerraCycle's website, and ship the box back via UPS. Taco Bell display QR codes and other signage in various parts of restaurants to promote the program, encourage signups. Rather than dropping off the used sauce packets at a restaurant, Taco Bell is using the mail because the majority of transactions are taking place at its drive-thru and are eaten out of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Also discovered that this was a preferred way for customers during its pilot launch, and the mail helps them minimize their transportation footprint and ship their box of saved sauce packets once full.
Mm.
Yeah, they estimate about 710 million metric tons of plastic will pollute the environment by 2040 if action isn't taken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Taco Bell is one of the first food brands to use TerraCycle.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things we've really got to do. We got to wean ourselves off plastics, or at the very least, develop a plastic that breaks down easier.
Yeah, they mentioned that by 2025, they're hoping to have packaging used by its customers to be fully recyclable, compostable, or reusable across all of its 7,000 global locations.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that this program is the first step, but not the final step, becoming a more sustainable brand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're particularly a chain that uses a lot of wrapping and such.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's sort of the nature of, I mean, that's just kind of the nature of their food, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, especially with the sauce packets. Especially,
I mean, even just with the basic tacos, you know, they have to put them in those little sleeves so they keep their shape, you know?
It depends on the type of taco, but yeah, some of that stuff does use like an extra cardboard sleeve.
Yeah.
A lot just sit in a wrapper.
Yeah. Now, the good thing is cardboard is actually fairly easy to break down and recycle. Plastic. Yeah. Not so much.
Yeah.
But anyway. Now for some movie news. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Have you seen this yet, Chris?
Nope.
You have it? All right. It broke U.S. Labor Day weekend records. It was a huge opening.
Yeah, they had an estimated 71.4 million at U.S. theaters between Friday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't even count Monday.
Yep.
I was expected to sell another $12.1 million in tickets. But the film has already more than doubled the previous $30.6 million record for the full Labor Day weekend,
mm-hmm.
which was set by, what do you think, Brandon?
I'm going to guess another Marvel movie.
No, Halloween from 2007.
Oh.
I think it's the Rob Zombie.
2007, the Rob Zombie one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is not what you would have thought.
Yeah, because that movie sucked.
Yeah, but it did really well.
Yeah.
That did 30, I'm looking at it now, did 80 million in box office. That was like a significant chunk of its overall
box office. I'm looking at
people realized it was bad.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's stop watching this.
Yeah. Turns out the movie's really good, apparently. So much so that some people legitimately forget that it's a but yeah, it had like a 150 to 200 million budget, and according to Wikipedia at last count, it's made $175.7 million at the box office. So,
yeah.
It's about two-thirds away to breaking even, really.
Yeah, as they made this a theater exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing that for a bunch of their other upcoming fall stuff across all the Disney
properties. Yep. So, yeah, great. Good thing it's like I think this is like the second film they've made with a person of color that has made such a huge impact after Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah. Showing that, yeah, having a with an a protagonist can make tons and tons of cash. Yeah. Next up, if you were a certain age, you cried your fucking eyes out this week because Steve Burns, the original Steve from Blue's Clues, made a video on its 25th anniversary about his departure, and
not the actual departure, but the canonical departure.
Yeah,
of the character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that his departure was a weird point where there are a lot of like weird rumors going around.
Yeah, it's like he had to go because he was a drug addict and he had rehab or something like that.
He died.
Yeah, so it turns out he just went because he wanted to continue his education.
Yeah, which is wild because I saw comments below the tweet. They're like, wait, he didn't die? Or he wasn't a drug addict or whatever?
Well, like, no, I mean, isn't he like kind of a semi-recurring character on the most recent version?
Yeah, but the people that hadn't really paid attention to any of that.
Yeah.
Sort of dealing with the trauma of being told this by friends or parents or whatever.
Yeah.
And not having like looked it up afterwards and like being, geez, that was fucked up for them to do.
Yeah.
Say, like one of your favorite people on TV is, you know, a drug addict, a bad person or dying or whatever.
Again, none of that was true. He was doing it because he wanted to further his education.
Yeah. The actor just wanted to move on. Because
mm-hmm.
I think he talked about there being other turnover at the show, for behind the scenes, and felt like it was the time to go.
Yeah,
after some like six, seven years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in the video, you remember how when we were younger, we used to run around and hang out with Blue and find clues, talk mm-hmm. to Mr. Salt, and freak out about the mail and do all the fun stuff. Then one day, I was like, "Oh, hey, guess what? Big news! I'm leaving." Here's mm-hmm. my brother Joe. He's your new best friend. And I got on a bus and I left and we didn't see each other for like a really long time. Can we talk about that? Because I realized that was kind of abrupt. I just kind of got up and went to college.
Mm-hmm.
That was really challenging, by the way. Like, great, because I got to use my mind and take a step at a time. Mm-hmm. Now I literally am doing many of the things that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at you. Look at all you have done and all you have accomplished in all that time. It's just, it's so amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we started out with clues. Now it's what? Student loans and jobs and families. And some of it has been kind of hard, you know? I know, There's like a fun little joke there, like, yeah, fuck student loans, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you that I really couldn't have done all of that without your help. In fact, mm-hmm. all the help that you helped me with when we were younger is still helping me today, right now. Mm-hmm. And that's super cool. I guess I just wanted to say that after all these years, I never forgot you, ever. And I'm super glad we're still friends. I ended it with saying, you look great, by the way. Whatever it is you're doing, it's working.
Yeah. And then he gave the ASL, like, you know, for so long. Yeah.
Yeah. To which just absolutely destroyed huge parts of Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as I include some of the ears, like somebody saying, far too old to be sobbing over Blue's Clues, and yet here I am.
Yep.
The one, me, I hate parasocial relationships. It's here in Blue Clues. I never forgot you. Me, it's a picture of a crying cat.
Mm-hmm.
Blue's Clues, Steve is proud of me and says I still look good, so you can't tell me shit for the rest of the week. I didn't even know I needed Blue Clues closure until now.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Steve from Blue's Clues apologizes, I can begin to work on my issues with men. 2021 is all about healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somebody else I saw was basically like, things have gotten so bad that Steve from Blue's Clues had to address the nation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's a nice message to put out there, especially as part of the anniversary of the show starting. Mm-hmm. Being a part of a lot of people's childhood, even if they weren't necessarily of the right age to take. Yeah.
Yeah, Blue's Clues is really popular.
Yeah. There are a lot of people like, wait, had realized only just recently, like the reruns they were watching weren't actually, the show as it was running.
Yeah.
That was reruns because they just kept re-airing them.
Yeah.
Shows how well they, kept going. Mm-hmm. How they stayed relevant and all that. But then there's a fun video they also put out of each of the hosts sort of watching the first episode they did.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So, which the first one for the second guy, Joe, he was talking about the one section. He's like, oh, this is where he says, I'm a fucking idiot. Cause he's like, oh, make sure you help him out. Cause he needs all the help he can get. And he's like, oh, I thought that was going to be worse than what it's said.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what he remembers from those episodes.
Yep.
So yeah, there's that Blue's Clues nostalgia everybody was in for.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Speaking of kid stuff, CBS Sports and Nickelodeon will be expanding their kid-friendly NFL games.
Yeah, they are. They did some of that stuff during the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had sort of animated effects going on for touchdowns and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be doing some more of that with doing a few games here and there, but also doing a sort of quicker, like 30-minute version every week of some stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about having some people from the NFL as well as some of the kids on Nick shows and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To host it, so yeah. Some neat stuff.
Yeah. And finally, we got a couple. First, we got a trailer for the new Matrix movie coming out, Matrix Resurrections. And yes, Keanu Reeves is still in it.
Yeah, seeing that title, I was like, wait, that wasn't the title of one of the other movies?
Mm-hmm.
Because that seems like a title they would have had, but...
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
But yeah, this one is coming from Lana Wachowski, the fourth film.
Mm-hmm.
It has Keanu Reeves, who's filming a John Wick movie at the time because he has his beard.
Mm-hmm.
As they were working on John Wick 4 at the same time as this. But John Wick 4 got delayed.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of creates this weird scenario where we see a Neo with a beard and long hair.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff. So people are like, oh, this is the canonical John Wick sequel here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the trailer looks really nice. I'm still kind of interested in seeing like how they explain how they get to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the way that the third movie ends as a sort of spoiler, but it's a movie that's been out for like 15 years at this point, 15, 16 years. But the way it ends is that the Smith gets destroyed, the mm-hmm. program, and the whole thing is Neo's coming to the Machine City mm-hmm. to plead for their letting him sort of try to, you know, destroy the Smith program once and for all, because it's becoming too powerful for them to handle. It's, you know, literally mm-hmm. killed everybody in the Matrix and turned them into Smiths.
Yep.
That's sort of what he's doing during the entire part of that movie up to that point mm-hmm. before the showdown. So at the end, once he's defeated, the architect shows up and talks to the Oracle because their original forms are mm-hmm. Reformed. And so he talks about how, you know, there are people that want to get out of the Matrix. He's like, well, we'll let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else can stay in the Matrix if they want to, kind of thing. So it seems like this is in the Matrix as, and the whole thing is that wasn't the first Neo. I think it was the fifth or sixth one.
Mm-hmm.
So he had been there and done that several times. So this might be explained as a new, you know, Mr. Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Carrie Ann Moss is in this, so potential for some resurrection of sort, but the way they cut this trailer together, you usually see like this just being complete nonsense for what anything is going on in here, other than just showing some cool scenes. So yeah, that's interesting. I'm curious to see like how they're modernizing things, because that was very much, they describe like this is set at the height of your civilization, which is I guess 1999. So, you know, flip phones
mm-hmm.
as kind of the standard way of communicating, you know, literally all based around hard lines.
Yeah.
Which is not as much of a thing anymore. At least for younger people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is gonna be interesting to see some more of this. This will be out December 22nd. Mm-hmm. In theaters and on HBO Max. So if you get that, you can check that out on mm-hmm. their service.
Yeah. All right. And finally, last but not least, we got a trailer for the Lego Star Wars Terrifying Tales for Disney Plus.
Yeah, this is sort of a Lego Star Wars. It's trying to be like, hey, as it says here, are you afraid of the Darth? Reference of the Nickelodeon show.
Mm-hmm.
It's an original special airing October 1st on Disney Plus, and it's mm-hmm. like spooky stories involving Star Wars characters and such. Mm-hmm. I guess technically set after the events of Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
Poe and BB-8 must make an emergency landing on the volcanic planet Mustafar, where they meet the greedy and conniving Greballa the Hutt, mm-hmm. who has purchased Darth Vader's castle and is renovating it into the galaxy's first and all-inclusive mm-hmm. Sith-inspired luxury hotel. Because, of course, why would they not do anything else?
Yeah.
especially on a volcano planet.
Mm-hmm.
There's lava everywhere. While waiting for his X-Wing to be repaired, Poe, BB-8, and Greballa, and Dean, a plucky, courageous young boy who works as Greballa's mechanic, mm-hmm. venture deep into the mysterious castle with Vader's loyal servant, Vanae. Along the way, it shares three creepy stories linked to ancient artifacts and iconic villains from across all eras of Star Wars. So,
mm-hmm. All right. Well, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. I do believe we have a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you get a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got links for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at archive.org, RSS, Google Play, pretty much any kind of podcast. And if we're not on there, well, just wait a few minutes, because as soon as we find out about a new aggregator, we will immediately sign up for it. So, With that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Join us next week. We will have a whole new show for you with a whole lot of other shit. And hopefully a bigger crowd as well. But we certainly didn't lack for stories to talk about this week. So, you know, that's good. Anyway, I have been Brandon Perkins. This has been Let's Weekenders. And for Chris Logie and all the others, I'd like to say good night, sleep tight. And as I will continue to say until the end of this fucking pandemic, if you can get the shot and you have not gotten the shot and you can actually get it and do not have any health reasons not to get it, please go get the vaccine shot, because I would like to be able to go out of my house without wearing a mask one day.